You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency, the PUTcast. PUT is a not-for-profit industry watchdog organization dedicated to exposing the truth about the shady, abusive practices of pharmacy benefit managers and how they affect American patients, healthcare providers, and taxpayers. On the PUTcast, we'll talk to pharmacy industry experts, influencers, and patients, always with the goal of bringing the truth, transparency, and solutions to America's prescription drug affordability crisis.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the PUTcast. I'm Monique Whitney. I am the executive director of PUT and the host for our show this month. It is November, and it has been a really interesting and fascinating year, 2020. I'm sure everyone on the panel tonight can agree it has not exactly gone the way that we thought it would go. But November is still a month where we, as a country, turn our thoughts to gratitude and the blessings that we have. And here at PUT, we are extremely grateful for our members. It is our members that make us who we are, who give us our ideas and inspire us to do the projects and the work that we do. And so we thought it would be really fun to bring together a panel of our newest members to talk about what they've been up to this year, what their hopes are for the future, and really just anything else that comes to mind. It's a free-form chat this evening. So I'd like to start off by introducing each of our member panelists. And I would like to start with our board member, Deb Kevany from Minnesota. Deb, say hi.
Hello, everybody.
We are so glad to have you on. David Baggett, our member from Illinois. Glad to have you on. Dave, say hi.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me, Monique.
We're glad you're here. We have our newest member and also the founder of our newest chapter, Nathan from Michigan. Nathan, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you for being here, Nathan. Really glad to have you and excited to talk about PUT Michigan. And then we have our other board member, Jeremy Counts, also known as Lord Dr. Jeremy. Jeremy, say hello.
Hello, everyone. That's me.
Lord Dr. Jeremy. If Jeremy is not serving as a panelist, it's very likely Jeremy will become my co-host as part of our show today. But let's open up the conversation with everybody. So first of all, it's great to have you all here. And every one of you comes from a different part of the country where really interesting and different things are happening. And I thought maybe a good place for us to start our conversation would be just to, you know, talk about what has been happening in your part of the world. And Dave, I thought we'd start with you over in Illinois. Maybe you could tell us how things have been going, what your year has been like.
Sure. I'd like to say that there were lots of ups and downs, but very few ups and lots of downs this year. We started off with getting news that one of our state representatives was going to introduce a lot of bills. He had filed at least 7 bills that were anti-PBM bills, some of them more hard-hitting than the others. And he was holding off on what he told us was getting the wording right of kicking PBMs out of all state business. So that would have been, you know, managed care, state employee health insurance, retiree health insurance, and workman's comp. So it was pretty exciting. And our spring session that's when it would have all happened, doesn't start until April. And as I'm sure everybody is aware, COVID hit, and the only thing our General Assembly did this year was pass a budget. So that was really disappointing. My store is just a little rural store, but it's 30 minutes from the Capitol. So, I mean, we have all kinds of state employees that come to my store. This would have been huge for me, you know, with 25 to 30% of my clientele being Medicaid and then all the state workers, that it would have turned my business around and allowed me to get back to being full staffed and servicing our customers the way that we want to. So we started off super excited, and you know, nobody really knew as COVID hit what was going to happen. But as we kept going forward, it just became obvious that nothing was going to happen. Then we got the news that Indy Health, a pharmacist-formed Medicare Part D plan, would indeed be offered in Illinois. And there were kind of ups and downs with that, with would they earn enough or raise enough money to be able to be in Illinois. But eventually they did. So that's one up. We're very hopeful that next year we will have some legislation at the state level, and that the Arkansas case will have a result that leads to us being able to pass laws that will make a difference. So, it doesn't sound like it does sound like a total downer, doesn't it? We're getting there and we're still hanging on. So I'm optimistic, I think.
That's good. Yeah. I don't think your story is altogether different from what's been happening anywhere else. I wouldn't feel too bad about being, you know, a downer year. 2020 and COVID has, I don't think anyone could have, you know, foreseen that it was going to go this way, but yeah.
So. Oh, and COVID did sweep through my store as well.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. You actually know firsthand what that's like.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
Is it? Is it really?
No one at our store got very sick, and we do have two high-risk people. Well, actually, one high-risk person and her husband, and they both got it and both had fine outcomes. But the logistics of keeping your business going through that, oh, my gosh. But, you know, I guess the PBM fight kind of prepares you that if I can put up with the PBMs, I can tolerate a little COVID.
Yeah, for sure. What's a little virus, you know, when you've got a much bigger virus that you have to deal with, for sure. Great. Well, thank you, Dave. I would, at this point, love to have Deb, why don't you chime in and tell us a little bit about, you know, your year and what you've been up to. And
well, like everybody else, we've kind of dealt with the coronavirus. Our patients have come in and out of the store. We've had the front of the store kind of closed off for a time frame where you can only do curbside service or delivery. The PBMs did a wonderful job of sending letters and phone calls to all of our employees or all of our patients saying, you know, you don't have to risk your life by going into your independent pharmacy. Just kind of deal with us and we'll send everything via
mail order.
You know, we're going to deliver it to you, but it's really through the mail order. And so we lost quite a bit of patients through that. We've kind of kept things going. We've won quite a few patients back. It's been a challenge, but we just keep doing what we're doing.
And so, you know, I'm curious because when you said the thing about the winning the patients back, in a little while, we're going to talk about some of the things that everybody on this show in some way has come up against the PBMs and had victories. And I'd love for you to share a little bit more about that. And also, I think you have founded a new support group where you are.
We have. So what I figured out in Minnesota is there's a whole lot of independent pharmacies out there that are feeling kind of forlorn, and I don't think there's anybody out there that's doing what we're doing or experiencing what we're experiencing. So I formed a group called Mindy's, Minnesota Independent Pharmacies, that there's almost 100 of us now. And we kind of came together to decide that we need a group to talk to each other, to bounce ideas off each other, to be able to talk to each other and figure out that we're not alone. And it's been really wonderful. And through this whole thing is we figured out that there's about 100 of us in Minnesota that we're all feeling hit by the PBMs. We're all feeling slighted by the PBMs. And we're feeling like our patients are being siphoned off from us. And this is a great opportunity for us to all talk to each other and to figure out that we can together figure out how to mitigate through this whole thing and to make things happen in our advantage.
That's really great. Yeah. And I will want to talk more about the Mindy's as well. And that actually gives us a perfect opportunity to go over to Nathan and talk a little bit about what you are doing as our newest member. Nathan, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your year and what you've been up to?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Monique. Yeah, so new POP member, our new chapter, and we haven't been really on the ground at this point, but I mean getting into why POT, and I think POT brings hope, I think, to the whole process of what's going on, and echoing what everyone has talked about. Anybody who is an independent pharmacist or is an independent pharmacy owner knows the struggles that are there. And for me personally, it's just looking at these DIR sheets, looking at it, it doesn't make any sense. The numbers aren't there. There's no logic to it. And I saw what POT was doing. I saw what was going on in Illinois. That's why I reached out to Monique and asked to be part of this organization. And I think there's a lot of steps that can happen, and they can't happen unless we have a group, unless we have a common voice to make something happen. And I think from the regulatory side, I think number one is within states is to get Medicaid to pay fairly, to pay through the dispensing fee, NADAC plus dispensing fee, which has happened in Michigan also. And making sure that we're not underpaid, making sure that we're not getting paid less than what the drug costs. I mean, there's no other industry in the entire United States where you get paid less than what you buy a product for. There's absolutely no rationale. And I know in the next 5 years or even before then, there's going to be a Netflix documentary talking about this, how it doesn't make any sense. And I think it needs, and I think there are opportunities to address it, not just on the political side, but I think within employers too. I think employers are also getting the bad end of the stick too. And there's a lot of data that was done through, three Access Advisors. And these guys undercovered a lot through the state Medicaid system. And there's no doubt this is happening on the employer side too. So from our standpoint, what we want to do is get independent pharmacy owners in Michigan together to talk. And just like Deb mentioned, to talk about what's happening so you don't feel alone and you know how to address these issues. And I think secondly is to bring awareness to employers, to what's happening. And a lot of employers, and personally I've talked to them, aren't aware of what's happening because employers, all what they're doing is just looking at what their deductible is, or for an employee side, they just look at what their copay is or their monthly payment to their employer. So I think there's a huge educational piece that needs to be out there, and that's what we're trying to accomplish, and that's my goal with this organization.
That is so great, Nathan. And so many of the points that you're making, I think, really resonate with other people, on the podcast tonight. Employer education is something that PUT started out doing years ago. We were trying to spread the word through the media, and that was going as it was going, but we always kind of knew it was never going to just be get this story told or try to get the laws changed. We always sort of knew that at the end of the day, how the system is going to change is if the market forces the change. And the only way that can happen is when you start getting into the payers, right? So we are a country where our healthcare is a benefit that is provided through most people's employers. And employers are the kind of, group, shall we say, that if they had all the background and all the information that they needed to make a truly informed decision on the healthcare benefits, they probably wouldn't be doing the job they're doing. They'd probably be a benefits broker because that's pretty much the only people out there who really understand the system, the way it's operating. And even then, I got to tell you, I'm not sure that that's the case. So employer education is a big deal. And I'm excited to hear that you have that as a focus out there in Michigan. That's great. Or Dr. Jeremy, please introduce yourself and tell us what's been going on over where you are in Virginia.
Hello, I am Jeremy. Well, first of all, I'd like to revisit a few things that were said. I think, number one, us talking about how we had to adapt to COVID and saying how it is actually harder to fight PBMs than it is COVID, I think says a lot, because we always have to be adaptable because of all the crap they're constantly trying to throw at us. We have to try to figure out, well, they're stealing my patients, so I got to figure out where to get more patients. I've got to advertise differently. I've got to reach certain demographics. We're always having to adjust. And then we've been doing this for years, and they squeeze us to the point where it's rough. And they just point everyone else to their own pharmacies, and they start going, oh, well, if you can't do the mail order, don't worry, we'll deliver now too. Oh, shut up. I've been delivering this whole time. They're putting out commercials, just patting themselves on the back. Shut up in these uncertain times. No one cares. They're so full of crap. And it's like Dan was saying, they point them to their own mail order facilities, or they have them go to one of their affiliated chains, if it's not a chain they directly own, and say that they can have deliveries when we've been adapted to this crap immediately. And they think that these huge corporations that are so bulky can respond in any way is ridiculous. But it's really annoying. But the good news is there has been a lot of good things happening this year. In Virginia, we passed a PBM reform law that is awesome. We're going to see how it gets implemented. We want to give it a little more teeth. We want to do a few more things. But shout out to my representatives, John Edwards and Chris Hurst. They both voted for it. John Edwards actually was a sponsor of the bill in the Virginia Senate. They have both found a very grateful donor in me after that. And I think more lawmakers, I've had a few disagreements recently where people think, oh, you know, we got to redo the way that we're paid and everything else. I don't believe any of that garbage. But people think that you can't make things better legislatively, and you can only do so much, but you still have to do these things. If they don't listen to the law, then we at least have a way to challenge them on it.
Yeah, exactly. And we've talked about Virginia in the past and the incredible turnaround that happened there, because it was just a couple of years ago where it looked pretty different, and it looked like it was going to be, your future looked very different in 2018.
Oh yeah. That's when I really started to notice quite a few things were starting to hit as far as reimbursements, how things were being done, but it's started to turn around a bit. I think what they're doing is, getting into DIRs and everything else. I think right now they are saying, oh, well, we're actually taking less on DIR. I think they're ramping that up this year because I've noticed more of a less reimbursement up front, but that's a whole other story. But Virginia, yeah, I think here in the future, whenever this law goes into effect and they have to start playing by the rules, it's going to do a lot for Virginia pharmacies.
Yeah, I agree. And I would invite Deb or Dave to comment on this, but I'm right with you on the whole thing about the patient steering and about, you know, the bigger PBMs that own pharmacies, and the worst one of all is the one that, you know, whose name shall not be said on this podcast, but, you know, this whole idea that they are a health hub and that they somehow are going to be the savior of health in the community is really frustrating, because they're so incredibly, they're so late to that party. Independent pharmacies have been delivering. They have been, you know, mailing when they've been allowed to. They've been the true health hubs of the community all along. You know, I would argue that some of these giant corporations have looked at what works in independent pharmacy and tried to, you know, co-opt it for themselves and try to make it like they somehow invented it. You know, and I say that as a patient, you know, someone who in years past used to go to, you know, one of these big evil, you know, pharmacy retailers and, you know, would stand in line. It was not a health hub experience, you know, standing in line, watching someone buy their medicine and their toilet paper and, you know, whatever else they were buying. It wasn't, you know, wasn't the experience of care. It was a very definitely different experience. I'm with an independent pharmacy now, and it's just night and day. But of course, you all know that because you hear me talk about that all the time. Deb, Dave, I'd love to, either of you, both of you, you know, chime in with your thoughts on that or anything else you've seen in terms of what you've been doing in the face of this chatter all year long about, you know, how these bigger chains can somehow make it better for patients.
I'll jump in and echo that Lord Dr. Jeremy is exactly right. The things that the chain pharmacies are coming up with saying, oh my God, we're doing home delivery. We're doing all this wonderful stuff. Independents have done that forever. And the only reason that they are as successful as they are is because they're siphoning off our patients through our claims data or however they're getting it and making our patients go to their pharmacies instead of ours. And it gets back to, if we can get back to patient choice and patient access and a free market, independent pharmacies would be just fine. But when the chain pharmacies are putting their thumb on the scale and tilting it towards them and pretty much taking our patients away from us, it's not a level playing field. It's not fair. It's not a free market, but it's what we've done forever. And it's really irritating that the chains are saying, oh my God, let me pat myself on the back. We're now starting to deliver through Uber or whatever platform they're using. So they're going to put my Embrow, which requires refrigeration, in between the fries and the pizza delivered to my patient, and it's all going to be fine. It's not fine. It's not okay, but that's where we are today because this whole system is just messed up.
Yeah, it is. Dave, what are your thoughts on that?
It's hard not to just open up with a litany of four-letter words when talking about did you say we're not allowed to say that word on this podcast?
You can say anything you want on this podcast.
I don't even care about Walmart and Walgreens anymore. It's all CVS. Those fuckers. What they're doing, you know, they direct everybody to them through either a financial incentive or flat out not even allowing them to come to our store. And truly, do they not allow them? No, but the nation is brainwashed into thinking, if my insurance doesn't cover this, I am not going to get it. You know, it's a $6 generic or whatever you charge for a 30-day supply of lisinopril. It's ridiculous. I just get so frustrated by it because somebody will walk into my store and now, granted, I only do 150 prescriptions a day. But if they bring in a prescription with counseling, they're out of there in 10 minutes. You can't even get to the front of the line in a CVS in 10 minutes. To have the gall to say that we're giving you good service, I mean, the only good service is, you know, Larry Merlo's salary and his stock options.
His limo that he goes and visits the stores in, I am told.
Yeah. Larry Merlo has done more harm to our country than Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden is wishing he could do Merlo this to small businesses. Like, he would have been so happy to do this crap.
I mean, it's just disgusting. I'm 56 years old. To see that pharmacy has become this, I remember being disgusted that they put drive-thrus in. And now it's just being cheapened to this, but let's be honest, there are plenty of people that still come to my store, and I'm sure to everybody's store who's on this call, who enjoys and appreciates the service that we offer, which is true service. And that means getting them whatever is within our means to get for them to make their drug therapy work, right? That shit isn't happening at CVS, and our customers know it. They just sometimes have to go there because they can't afford to pay the copay that, you know, CVS is going to enforce upon them at our stores. We have to break through this somehow. I love the the talk of talking to employers. I mean, we have to reform this. When we're sitting here in a system that we are paying people to pay for our health care, and those companies go by the American motto, I have to make more every year. If I don't make my Wall Street expectations, we're not surviving. Therefore, the prices just keep going up and up. We have to, for them, for all those three big companies to do that, they have to suck more and more money into the system every year. And who's that coming from? That's coming from the people that pay the bills. That's coming right out of your and my pharmacies and people's pockets who are coming to our counters just so they can keep growing. So I don't even know the facts for sure. Where are the top three PBMs that are now insurance companies and pharmacies? Where are they on the top Fortune 500? Within the first 20, Monique?
Within the first 13. We have one at number 5, one at number 7, and one at number 13.
And that's disgusting.
Especially when they're making all this money offering shitty service. It is subpar service. It's not like they're offering anything new or good. They've rigged the game. And yeah. We've got to pay to play it, and we still lose.
And add to that, my fill-in pharmacist works for CVS. He says CVS pharmacists are the most miserable pharmacists he's ever met in his life. They hate their jobs. They're making all this money. They're not even treating their employees well, except for Larry.
I'd rather die than work for a chain. Sorry.
It certainly gives you something to think about. You know, it's fascinating when you look at how these major corporations, which are sitting at the top of the Fortune 500, and they don't manufacture a product, and the only service that they provide is a intermediary service, it should tell us something about the state of our system and about, you know, how deeply, deeply entrenched they are. Because we look at here at Putt, we talk all the time about what's going to be the solution, like the real world solution to fixing this problem, so that pharmacies and physicians and specialists and all those people that are out there, you know, providing a service, a treatment for people who are ill or who need this assistance, so that those people can earn a living. Because if you break these conglomerates up, they're traded on the stock market. What happens to someone's 401k if that happens? That's the level of thinking that we need to start, you know, thinking at in order to even begin to have a hope to crack this problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I get it, but is the answer worrying about what's going to happen to someone's 401k? Isn't that void just going to be filled as soon as they're gone?
I hope so, because I have a 401k and I certainly wouldn't want anything to happen to it. And that's, you know, to your point, Dave, it's not the reason to not break them up. They have way too much power. They definitely have way too much power. So Nathan, you've been kind of quiet. I'm curious what your thoughts are as our conversation's unfolding here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is what Putt does, is through education, but I think it's a targeted education to what's happening. And I've talked to a lot of health benefit brokers and heads of HR, and they have no idea what's happening behind the scenes. And they have no idea that the price that they're paying these companies for drugs is inflated 1,000% sometimes. And it's all based on equations that are there. And I don't know the exact details, but somewhere around the line of AWP and minus 75%. And, you know, anybody in the pharmacy world knows AWP is some bogus, doesn't make any sense. Right. And, yeah. And you get drugs that you buy them for $2 and $2, and the AWP is $973. And these are all the equations are running through. And it's this complicated equation that nobody is able to pinpoint. Nobody's able to fully understand unless you're in the mix, unless you're in the soup to really know. And even then, we're still one. We're a silo as pharmacies. We're not communicating with the employer side. Everything's so non-transparent. It's almost designed to be that way. And I think with PUT, we have an opportunity to provide that education and to get out there to talk to our county official, you know, people in charge of county, employee benefits, talk to people in the cities, talk to people in school systems. You know, they're in charge of thousands of employees. And this was mentioned earlier, their prices for drugs are consistently going up every year. And we know that the prices, some generic drugs are going down. And there's no logic to the whole system. And you can get deeper and look and diving into, you know, we're forced into giving brand name drugs when a much cheaper generic is available. And it's done for a reason. And it's not for our benefit. It's not to the employer. It's to the PBM's benefit. And they're the only one that are benefiting from this. Why would you switch from an Advair? Why would you go for have an Advair brand that's required on the insurance and the generic equivalent, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, is made by the same company, and you're forcing the pharmacies to use that. And the same scenario with insulins. You have insulins that are made by, I just looked at this the other, Novo Nordisk. Novo Nordisk makes, once again, correct me wrong, I don't have it in front of me, I believe the Novolog, and the generic, which is also on the market, and that costs for like five pens for one of the pen injections. It's about $500. You have the generic equivalent that's out there that's $200, $250, and it's made by the same company. So there's no rationale here, and there's one group that's gaining from this, and we just got to get out there. We gotta educate, and then. Now, it's getting off base of, you know, the political side, but politicians need to understand this also. And not only politicians, employers and pharmacy students need to know this too. I did a presentation at a pharmacy school, and I asked everybody in the room, do you guys know what DIR fees? These are pharmacy students, second year, third year. There was a group of 30 kids. One student raised their hand, and that's because she worked in an independent pharmacy. And that was scary to see that not anybody within the school even knew what was going on and were educated to what's going on. So if we're going to make a dent in making a change, we not only need to come together as independent pharmacies but also educate through the schools, educate to the employers.
Oh yeah, these poor fucking kids, they have no clue, because the pharmacy schools, they push all that crap that they've been pushing for years. Oh, we're going to get provider status and get paid all this money for doing all this stupid shit. Shut up. We can't even get paid for our inventory on the shelves. You're just giving them more reasons to pay us less. And they just push that more because they want to keep pumping out more kids because that puts more money in their pocket. And those kids got to have something to do. So that's what we're doing. We got to get a rein on those pharmacy schools.
Yeah, Nathan, I am shocked that you even got in to speak with one. I went to St. Louis Pharmacy, and it's a private school, and it was it's in the town that Express Scripts is in. They won't let me anywhere close to their students to talk to them. I called the president and had maybe a 5-minute conversation with him, and he just absolutely not.
I think that to your point about reaching the students, it's fascinating that at that level you are facing barriers. It's sort of like you need a whole new level of gag clause legislation to come out. You know, something's seriously wrong if you aren't allowed to tell your patients' employers that they're getting a raw deal, or you can't get into a school to tell students what to expect in the real world. It's fascinating. It's really, really interesting. And, you know, the question on the table is, what do we do about that? You know, in a perfect world, what would we do? And in an imperfect world, what should we do?
Well, I mean, I would say what we're doing, keep pushing legislatively. I think the breakthrough, I've always thought this, will come when 60 Minutes does a piece on this. And there is actually more pressure on our federal legislators to get this fixed instead of them receiving the campaign contributions and whatever the fuck else they're getting from these guys. If I remember when I first started getting active in advocacy, I spent an afternoon at my store looking up what the state legislators were getting from Humana and Caremark. For some reason, I had those guys were on my radar that day. And every single one of them, I got through about half of the Senate and a tenth of the House. And every single one of them had contributions from these guys. It's disgusting. I mean, how do you compete with that? But if the media gets there, and I mean, not just social media, if a big media outlet gets this and other ones start talking about it, I think that might turn things.
Nah, that won't do shit. It's too complicated on a federal level. You can get some stuff done on the state level by educating lawmakers, but on the federal level, they're bought and owned. They have been for years. That you can expose things, and they've tried. Like, there's been a few things. It's come out. New York Times have done articles about it. I mean, they've been exposed. It's been out in the open. It's an open secret that they're leeches at this point, but they're leeches that put money in politicians' pockets, and they give them a lot of cover. Because what are they going to do? Swing at them and miss, and then what? They start funding their opposition, and they'll fund them well. So it's hard to take them down, and we can expose them, and we can do everything else, and we have to continue to, but it's going to take more than just the media picking it up, because the media has, and they know they're awful, but people also lump this in with the bigger problem of large corporations in general. They just think, oh, well, it's inevitable, when this is healthcare. We have to quit treating pharmacy and our profession like we're fast food workers. That was some of the worst things we could have ever done. It was like you were saying, the drive-through and everything else earlier. We have to change the narrative, and we have to give them a market option. And we've been working on this. You have to give them an option in which they can bypass these leeches and save money going directly to us while we still make an actual profit. And that's the way we got to go. We got to continue educating lawmakers, but don't ever expect the federal government to bow to any kind of media pressure over this, because there's just too much money in it right now. We've got to go after them. We've got to hit them hard, and we've got to hit them fast. And it's going to have to be a swing that takes them out.
And I think too, we have to, we have to learn from each other, and I think learn from best practices. And I think something that every state can, and I'm sure they're trying to hop on, is getting the NADAC, or getting the acquisition cost of a drug plus dispensing fee to a pharmacy for Medicaid patients. And I don't know when this podcast is going to be aired, but we're going to have Michigan. So I'm going to do a little plug for the Michigan PUD Association on November 23rd. We're going to have our government affairs manager. He's going to talk from the state of Michigan Pharmacy Association, to talk about what we did. So that's an example of, you know, what we can do is learn from that. And that, I think once the ball gets rolling, there's been a few states that have done it, West Virginia, Kentucky, and chime in if there's other states that you guys know. I think California is also.
I think help. Yeah, California.
California is going to ride. I think once that rides, that's going to be a domino effect, and then from there, it's getting the fairness right, like getting to the Supreme Court case that just happened, Rutledge versus PCMA, and just getting the fair reimbursement, and then once one state goes, then, you know, hopefully this goes into a domino effect, but we have to learn from the best practices and how it worked. And I know the state of Michigan, what they did is that they got the woman from West Virginia as an advocate. to teach how this happened, to teach how to educate the legislators, how to show data to prove this, that this is the way to go, that this is a better route than what's been happening in the past.
Nathan, what is what will you guys be paid there in Michigan? NADAC plus?
I believe it's NADAC plus $10.63. But come to our podcast, or not podcast, but our event, and we can share it later. It's going to be on the 23rd.
And that's right. We're excited about that. The November 23rd. It's the inaugural PUP Michigan event, and it's going to be great. So everybody here should make plans to attend that, and also everybody listening. Look for more information on that coming. Deb, I'm curious about your thoughts on this topic, because you just recently were featured in a news story there in Minnesota, and you have been working really hard at the legislative level. In fact, your legislator, you have two who are solid pharmacy champions.
We do. We have people in Minnesota that understand the trials and tribulations that we have been through and that we need to continue to work through. We've not made the progress that we would like to. Biggest problem is they passed legislation that was phenomenally awesome, but the enforcement side of it has been kind of rough. So there are positions that are open to try to make the rules and the enforcement stronger. However, the getting into the positions to do that has been kind of difficult. And as we kind of work through this, Minnesota has done a lot of stuff to do great things to keep the PBMs under wraps and to regulate them. But the enforcement side has been weak, and we're really working hard to do that. And we're making progress as we go. I started a group called MINDIs, Minnesota Independent Pharmacies, and those guys have really stepped up. It's 100 independent pharmacies that have kind of drawn a line in the sand and said, you know what? We are really being hurt by things that are happening, which is happening all over the United States, but primarily Minnesota. And we really need to take a stand. And we're trying to fight back, but the difficulty is with the swamp as deep as it is really difficult to get things going. And we keep trying, we keep fighting, and we're just going to keep going all along the way. But with 100 people behind me, I feel a lot more better than 100 people, David's fighting against a Goliath, than one person fighting against a Goliath. So we're just going to keep going and we'll see what happens.
That's great. That's totally the spirit. So as we look to the, we're coming to the end of this this non-year 2020. I'm curious, as you look to the future, what do you see are going to be your biggest priorities moving into 2021? And I'll just open, Deb, why don't we start with you, and then we'll sort of work around the panel.
I would say there's been some great laws that have been passed that are supposed to corral and to make the PBMs more transparent. We just make the enforcement is the piece that needs to happen. And then take those laws that have been passed and not only force the enforcement, but also circle back and say, okay, there's like 10 or 12 or whatever loopholes that are in it. And if we can close those loopholes to make the PBMs do what the spirit of the law is supposed to do, that would make all of our worries go away.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Dave, what do you think? What do you see as the direction moving into 2021?
Well, I guess the biggest hope would be to get Senator Menard's legislation back on track and get those laws passed. You know, hopefully Rutledge versus PCMA gives us a good decision so that it is legal for us to regulate these guys. And, you know, as Deb's pointed out, and when I was at the PUT conference in Austin, so many people said, you know, we passed these laws and they just kept doing the same thing. So but still, we got to get some things passed. And I think the one big one that I'm really hoping for is getting them kicked out of all the state business in the state of Illinois. That would be huge, because then I think hopefully with that that nugget out there, it would be easier to do with what Jeremy's saying and educate employers and get them to start looking at a different way of doing things. Just getting one of them done would be great, but hopefully we can shoot for the whole ball of wax.
Yeah, definitely. We say around PUT something to the effect of go big or go home. It usually has more expletives in it than that. And on that note, Jeremy, what do you see for 2021? What should we be focusing on?
We need to focus on the fact that this is a goddamn war. Like our other organizations, they're trying to work with the PBMs. They're trying to be okay. Oh, well, if we come to the table and we give this up, no, this is a war. They're never going to play fair, and we're at a disadvantage. The only thing we have is our flexibility. And so in 2021, I want to see us, and this is why I think PUT is the best professional organization we have. It's because we recognize these facts, and we're actually going after them. We're not playing nice. And we have to continue doing that. And I think that's one thing I want to see out of 2021 is more and more people coming to join us in doing that.
Yeah, we've taken some big steps. We've swung for the fences, as you know, someone once told us. We have submitted executive order language to the Trump administration. We have, in no uncertain terms, very directly said the answer to this is to break up these conglomerates. We are about to defend model policy language at the American Legislative Exchange Council. I'm very proud of the work that we have been doing as an organization, and everything that we've done, you know, coming right back to where we started the podcast, is a function of our members. We found our way to the Trump administration through a member. We found our way to ALEC through a member. The legislation, the recommendations, they came from members. You know, our members give us our data. They talk to us about their issues, and then we turn around and we provide, you know, evidence and support and proof through the media that what they're talking about is real. So yeah, Nathan, what do you think about 2021? What do you see as your priorities?
For priority, our priority is a PUT. New PUT chapter in Michigan is to get awareness to as many independent pharmacies as possible, to get communication with one another, and to collaborate on not only policies, but to what's happening in the system, and to educate and to get the group together to connect with employers, to connect with cities, to connect with whoever is providing health benefits, to provide education. Because I feel that there's no transparency in this, and they need to know, they need to understand. And that's what we see. And I'll put a little point there too. After hearing what happened in Michigan with the change in the reimbursements for Medicaid, I believe in democracy after that. I really do. And we, in just a brief history of what happened, this same budget was brought into the state of Michigan in 2019, and in October 2019, and it didn't pass. And everyone was really excited about it. We had the data to show it, and there was a lot of pharmacists that were disappointed by it, but it was rebrought back in, and it passed. It worked, and they were able to show to representatives, they were able to show to senators in Michigan that this is what's happening, and there's other pathways. So I truly believe in democracy after that. And I know I guess now is a really good time. I guess is the theme of the country right now, democracy, your vote counts, your voice matters. And it truly does. And I was never big into politics. And I remember just even visiting my state capital in middle school, just absolutely no interest at the time. And, but I think we all need to be interested in it, and not only for, you know, what's happening in the country now, but, you know, for our industry, and not only for pharmacy, independent pharmacies, this is for all, anybody who is a pharmacist needs to be interested in this, because if we don't change, then with the PBM status, then there's going to be no independent pharmacies, especially in the rural areas. There's going to be less jobs available, because even chain stores will be cutting because their reimbursements aren't as high. And then ultimately, what's going to happen to anybody who's a pharmacy student? They're going to be less. There's going to be less jobs. There's going to be more competition for residencies. So it's overall, it's going to hurt everybody who is a pharmacist. And I think that should be a battle cry, not just for independents, but for anybody who's a pharmacist to chime in, to understand what's happening and to how to make your voice heard.
I think that's really well said, Nathan. Thank you. We are coming to the end of our podcast. And normally when we are ending, we ask our guests to share some advice that they have for the people who are listening. But tonight I'm going to ask you to share something just a little bit different. And that is, what would you say, or what would you want someone who is learning about PUT or considering joining PUT, what would you want them to know about PUT? Why do you think they should join PUT? And Deb, why don't we start with you?
Well, I think PUT fights very hard for the independent pharmacy, not only a state level, but actually on a national level. And if you're sitting in a store thinking, my letter to my legislature, my email to my legislature, my phone call to my legislature isn't getting me very far, it actually is. It might take two or three or four times to contact them to actually get a response back. But understand that everything that you do on a store level, individual level, does make a difference. But contribute to PUT, join PUT, because we have it figured out. We know who to talk to. We know how things work. We know how to push the envelope. And your dollars don't go to waste, because it's a very small number of people in PUT that are actually very vocal, very loud, and very willing to fight for you, that your voice is actually heard. And we are fighting every day for independent pharmacy and how things work and why things work. And we just need the additional dollars behind us to help us. But regardless of the extra dollars, we're going to fight every day like crazy for everybody in independent pharmacy. And please just step up and help us.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you. Dave, how about you? What advice do you have for someone looking at PUT?
Well, my advice is to join. I mean, PUT is an organization that is single-mindedly focused on eliminating these sons of bitches. I don't think, you know, there's no talk of reform. There's talk of get them the hell out. You guys, through all our members and through Monique, we understand what they're doing. And if you just look at your tax return for the last few years and say, what the hell am I doing here? The people that have joined PUT are the people that want to stay in here and keep this going. Join us and get all the resources you can to fight these bastards. And that's my endorsement of PUT.
Thank you. That's also really great. I'm so inspired. I should be asking everybody this question. Jeremy, Mr. Outspoken, what do you think? What would you say to someone who is considering joining PUT?
PUT in this year has done more for our profession and accomplished more than the other professional organizations have done in decades. They're useless. They're flaccid, really. They have nothing and they do nothing. And I know that some of them are trying to turn it around, but really, I think that in the end, they just want to play nice and kind of make sure that we might exist, maybe. But as far as independent owners, the pharmacy as a whole, I don't think they quite get it. And we're the only ones out there that's actually making headway. We're actually the ones out there that recognize not only is this a war, but it is, it's a war to the end. Either we're going to exist or they're going to exist. And the world's a lot better if we're the ones that exist.
And for those of you who don't know Jeremy, we've been working with him. You can notice, you'll probably notice he holds back quite a bit in sharing what he really thinks. And by that, we mean not at all. Nathan, what advice do you have for someone who's looking at PUT?
Yeah, my advice is hope. And anybody who I think that this is an unfortunate scenario is anybody who is an independent pharmacy owner. There's so much in common, and the theme is what's happening to the on the negative side. I mean, to state that, this brings hope. It brings hope to what's happening, and you can see that there's light on the other side. There's hope on the other side of the rainbow. And I think anybody who is feeling like, hey, there's no hope and there's nothing we can do, you got to join. You got to get involved. You have to know what's going on politically, or you're going to feel hopeless and you're going to feel like there's nothing I can do, but there is. And there is that glimmer of hope, and it's been shown, and it's there, and the resources are here to make that happen, and to understand that change can happen. And this doesn't make any sense. I mean, bottom line, everything that's going on, there's no rationale, and our voices need to be heard, need to be out there to show that this doesn't make sense. We are here to show you that, and we need to talk to the right people. And once you talk to the right people, that's when initiatives change. That's when policies change. That's when the lights turned on and understanding that this way can change. So that's my, I guess, two cents on PUT, and ultimately just hope. Hope in this, I could call it a dark time, but I think there's ways to get it outside of this dark time, and there's hope at the other side of the tunnel.
That's just perfect, Nathan. Thank you. That's the perfect place to bring our podcast to an end. To each of you, Dave in Illinois, Nathan in Michigan, Deb in Minnesota, and Jeremy in Virginia, thank you so much for taking time to be on our podcast and to share with us what you've been doing, and just to have a candid conversation about what it's been like. We appreciate you. We appreciate everything that you're doing. To the people who are listening, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your support of PUT. If you are interested in knowing more about PUT or would like to join, you can find us at truthrx.org. There is a big join and contribute button on our homepage, and we would love to have you come join us. And with that, I will say thank you, everyone. Have a fabulous month, and we will see you next month on the podcast.